this whole process, all these phases, all this kind of stuff, again, very long, very difficult, usually measured in decades. But on account of the Rona, the goal is a large-scale distribution of virus or vaccine before the end of 2020 or 2021.
That's fast. We're talking next 4 months. Like they're trying to get this thing out there, distributed, and in people's bodies before, you know, before we all watch the ball drop.
As a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, a disease podcast for this disease world. As always, I'm Andy Pupa.
And I'm Brett Bales.
And we are still alive.
COVID-free since 1993, technically.
Yeah, actually, Brett knew about COVID way before everybody else did. Actually, that's a conspiracy theory that's out there.
Standing on the street corner shouting about, and no one's listened to me. But
yeah, Brett's like Rorschach. He actually like takes off his mask every once in a while and puts on a different outfit and stands on a soapbox with a megaphone. Mm-hmm. But he wears a different mask, so nobody knows he's Brett. But if you live in Marin County, it's been him on every street corner this entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean,
jig is up, Brett.
Yeah, I've been warning us that this was gonna happen. I have been for many years, and we're as COVID-y as ever. We're as Rona riddled as is all get out, and that's I think is that a good enough update for like how we're doing?
Yeah. Rona riddled's pretty good actually. I think Rona riddled, especially for California right now. I think we're pretty Rona riddled right now.
We're like so New Zealand. So you know we like to make our main episodes kind of evergreen, but this is a COVID update. Spoiler alert. And where we're at right now, as of coming into mid August, New Zealand is just bragging and flaunting the fact that they've had no like cases for
zero. They're like, at zero.
Yeah. And the United States is like the opposite of that.
More than zero. We'll say more.
It's greater than or equal to one. And it's more than that.
Yeah.
And it's like showing no signs of really like letting up, and like school's about to start. And it's just gonna be like a whole new just I don't know.
Not only is like New Zealand doing well, they're playing rugby again. They're like playing sports.
They're
having like thousands of fans in the stands. They're drinking, high-fiving each other. They're doing everything the US wants to do right now.
Yeah. If you're listening to this and you are in New Zealand, and I know we got at least a couple.
Yeah, we see
what are
you.
What are you doing? What's life like?
Yeah.
Out there?
Send us an email at viraloadpod@gmail.com. Let us know how the other side lives. I mean, we just don't know what
like?
That's
I don't
like.
Remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But that's, I think that's what we want to talk about today is like, how do we, what's our way out?
Yeah. We've
that's
been in this black hole.
Get, you know,
how do you
like,
escape a black hole, Brett?
Yeah. Like, when is this going to end? Literally, that's the question I get every time I go anywhere and run into anyone. It's like, it's just this dejected look of like, ugh, when is this going to end? Like, you know, people just are dejected and it's, you know, they want a way out. How do we get out of this?
Well, Brett, I mean, we need herd immunity, right? All we need is herd immunity. That's one of those ping words.
We're a bunch of moo cows. We're the herd. We need that immunity.
We're the sheep.
And we are we're looking to be rid of coronavirus, which by now, as of August, mid-August, we're looking at globally over 20 million cases, over 700,000 deaths, and The U.S. is leading the charge in total cases, so we're past 5 million.
We're number one. Mm-hmm. We're number one.
And we are, yeah, we're leading in a lot of categories. We're right up there. So number one, two, three in the world, number of cases, USA, Brazil, India.
Fine company.
Yeah, yeah. We are leading in total number of deaths and a bunch of other stuff that we don't really want to brag about.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're at the point now where we're going back to school. It looks like there's no light at the end of the tunnel, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. At least that's what keeps me going, and it's going to come in the form of a vaccine.
Oh, says you, Brett.
Because that's that herd immunity you talk about, and you say, what is herd immunity? Basically, that's how we are going to have the virus no longer rampaging through the community. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when I start getting into virology and vaccinology. It is not going to be super sciencey, so don't. I saw you looking to click off there, but keep listening because we're gonna keep it light. We're gonna kind of keep it funny because you can't help but laugh at what the U.S.'s solution is to like a rapid vaccine production plan. You wanna give us the name of this?
Yeah. So everybody in the world is trying to rapidly produce vaccines. That's the big thing. Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
And the U.S. is no different. And in very U.S. fashion, we have what we're calling Operation Warp Speed.
Woo!
And I did a little bit of research, and according to the Dungeon Master, the top three runners up were Operation Wicked Fast, Ludicrous Speed. And we are geeks, but that's totally cool now. It's 2020 and chicks dig that. We're all taken.
So I think they made a good choice. Operation Warp Speed. That's kick ass.
If there's a follow-up to Space Force, it's definitely Operation Warp Speed. Like, it's the same guys. Like the people like they were like who made up Space Force are like in Space Force 2, Operation Warp Speed. Like, it's just a ridiculous thing. However, maybe it saves us. Who knows?
This is literally the name given to the vaccine production process that is breaking and shattering and setting all kinds of records, and the word unprecedented is being thrown around left and right.
Big list.
Because, you know, making a vaccine, as we'll get into, is a long, tricky process, and we are just warp speeding through this. And that's actually the name of this thing, Operation Warp Speed. And it's like, yeah, like I'm picturing the kids who play Dungeons and Dragons are now like, you know, MDs, PhDs working for the NIH, and like, you know, they're sitting around in a think tank and they're like, we got to come up with like a really cool name, you guys. And this is what they came up with. And I feel like they have like matching rings or something. So like they all like after a meeting, they put their fists in the middle and they like touch rings and they're like, let our powers combine. Like,
and definitely,
yeah,
for sure. Somebody named Melvin came up with this 100%, and he is proud, and he is not living in his mom's basement anymore because he has a nice apartment just outside of Washington D.C. You know, and but I mean, we all know, Brett. I mean, you from working in research and science, and me from working in some medical. We all know that only good things come from speeding up medical process. Like that's
We all know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking about this. Like, do I really want to, you know, stick something into my veins that came from a process called Operation Warp Speed? You know, it's maybe less sexy, but I would go with like Operation, like evidence based, or like Operation peer reviewed, or like, you know, Operation thoughtful clinical trial. But Operation Warp Speed, they went a different way with it.
Yeah, it sounds like the underground like drug ring that was around where Lance Armstrong and all those guys were taking EPO. They're like Operation Warp Speed to be the fastest cyclist in the world. Sounds like a much more apt name.
Was that
for
like
that.
When he was like injecting like virgin goat blood into him or something like
Ethropoietin,
that?
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, it's epigen. It was erythropoietin. It basically allows you to hold more oxygen in your blood cells. But yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe he was a consultant on this.
I think so.
Okay.
So, but what is the point of all this, Brett? What is the point of Operation Warp Speed?
We want to return to normal life, normal-ish life, because God knows like what this is all going to look like in a year or whatever, and what kind of lingering community level like psychological trauma will be left over. But, you know, this is our way out. If we want to say, like, when is it all going to end? How is it going to end? It's going to have to be a vaccine. Because basically, for the pandemic to stop, we need to achieve herd immunity, which basically, I'll go with the wildfire analogy. So let's say that the virus is like an ember or like a flame. And when you have a completely naive or totally susceptible population, that's like a dry field. And the fire can just spread and just like it has plenty of fuel. Herd immunity is basically like going in and like mowing it all down, or like unleashing a herd of goats to like, you know, nibble away at all the like brush and stuff.
Okay.
And that little ember eventually has nowhere left to go. So maybe it like will burn a little patch here and there, but eventually the patches start like getting further spread apart, and eventually it has nowhere to go. So it just like it dies out. And that's essentially what herd immunity is, but for people and not fire and goats.
Okay.
But well, I got goats on the mind. There's goats around.
Yeah, no, I saw that.
Hills. Yeah.
They've been doing that a ton for basically fire prevention. They've been putting
so cool.
like huge pastures of goats because it allows the goats to eat.
Yeah.
And it takes care of the fire. So it's pretty wild.
It's a perfectly clumsy analogy for herd immunity too. So I'm going to go with it.
Well,
that's it.
I mean, and we've talked about it a bit on the podcast, but basically, if you put it in perspective, people are like, oh, why can't you just let this run wild? Why can't you just let it run wild? Per the last census for 2020, there are 331 million people in the U.S. Right now.
Hmm.
So close to 198.6 million people plus would have to get the virus in order to get herd immunity. So we can understand why that's been an issue and why science has been like, hey, maybe we do the slow play on this one because 196 million people in the hospitals might not be great.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like, you know, and I'm just going to stick with the fire analogy. If you don't like it, you know, 5 stars on iTunes.
Exactly.
But yeah, so letting it just kind of run wild is like letting all the brush just burn up. And eventually there's nothing left to burn because it's all been burned. Or the other way is to kind of like mow it or let a bunch of goats out and eat it all up. And that's kind of like the vaccine route. So for herd immunity to happen, meaning like the virus basically has nowhere left to go. It's just stops running into new people to infect. You either have to have a vaccine or you have to just let the virus come through and roll through in multiple waves over the next few years until 60 to 70% of the population is immune because they've gotten sick. So there's, you know, just nowhere left for the virus to go. So if we want to not have, you know, all those people get sick and die and society to completely crumble, the only real way to achieve herd immunity is through an effective vaccine that will allow us to hit that kind of magic 60 to 70% like immunity level.
Mm-hmm. And fast. Warp speed.
Yeah. So our hopes and dreams at this point depend on a good vaccine. Like that's where we should all be rooting for. And we should all be wearing like Operation Warp Speed t-shirts or like those big foam like fingers that you use at sporting event games.
Sporting ball stick games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's actually really interesting because it means that we have to take what is normally a very long, arduous, difficult process in making vaccines and just pressing fast forward on it. And while basically producing an effective vaccine, something that's actually going to like do what it's supposed to do and not cause like weird side effects and kill people. Because if it did that, No one's going to want to take it, and then the whole thing will crumble. So it's got to be safe, and it's got to, like, work. And it's there's a lot of pressure because we also need it done, like, really, really fast.
Yesterday.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to get into, and that's kind of, like, it's pretty interesting. And a little history lesson first, and this goes back to the 1700s. Where our story really begins with a fellow named James Lind of the 1740s. So James Lind was a surgeon's mate in the Royal Navy. And in 1739, he became a surgeon's mate, which, I don't know. Any good jokes for that? No?
No.
Okay. We'll keep it highbrow. He spent time kind of with the Royal Navy, and they were sailing around the Mediterranean, the coast of Africa, the West Indies. And, you know, this sounds like, oh, what an adventure. That sounds like, you know, high seas, adventure in the high seas. But this was not super glamorous, like glamping or whatever the equivalent is of sailing. It was, you know, ships were cold, they were damp. And have been described by some as unwholesome. The food consisted of putrid beef, rancid pork, moldy biscuits, and foul water.
Not great.
Outbreaks of disease like scurvy were common. So that's either describing the Royal Navy in the 1700s or I guess, I don't know, modern cruises are a little sketchy, but...
So back in the day, they just had, like, surgeon's apprentices, like, just a surgeon's friend? Like, this is completely open, you know?
So he had, like, medical training. I'm not exactly sure what a surgeon's mate is. I mean, it's kind of funny, but basically he was part of the Navy. He was, you know, a medical person, and he was seeing and experiencing these, like, really... like
horrific
conditions. I mean, that sounds just terrible.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it wasn't even that long ago. Like this, these were still bad back in the day. I mean, there's still cases of people talking about this in like the 1940s and World War II, where people were dealing with the kind of stuff. So this was ongoing. But so this is pretty interesting.
And you know, this is why we should all eat our fruits and vegetables, because scurvy is gnarly. That's why. Pre-pandemic, whenever like I would get a water, like when I was at a restaurant and they say, you know, do you want a lemon or lime with that, I'm like, yeah, include that, this is anti-scurvy, like this will, you know, keep the scurvy away for another month. And it's for good reason, because this is from Lind's clinical description of scurvy. This is a quote from his writings. Okay, he says, quote, "The first indication of this disease is generally a change of color in the face, to a pale and bloated look. There, aversion to motion degenerates soon into an universal lassitude, with a stiffness and feebleness of the knees upon using exercise, with which they are apt to be much fatigued, and upon occasion subject to a breathlessness or panting. Their gum soon after becomes itchy, swell, and are apt to bleed upon the gentlest friction. Their breath is often offensive, and upon looking into their mouths, the gums appear of an unusual redness, are soft and spongy and putrid. They are prone to fall into hemorrhages from other parts of the body. Their skin at this time feels dry, and when examined, is found covered with several reddish, bluish, or rather black and livid spots, as it were, a bruise. Many have a swelling of their legs, which is first observed on their ankles towards the evening and hardly to be seen the next morning, but it gradually advances up the leg and the whole member becomes adamantous." I think that just means swollen.
Yeah.
That's scurvy, ladies and gentlemen. That's scurvy as noted by James Lind.
Mm-hmm. Not good. Gross.
No.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. So why am I talking about the scurvy of the 1700s? This is actually a really famous case study, and this is really considered like one of the original or like the origin story of the kind of modern day clinical trial, which all vaccines have to go through, which we're going to get into. But on the 20th of May, 1747, James Lind wrote the following. I selected 12 patients in the scurvy on board the Salisbury at sea. I guess that was the name of the boat. Or what they were eating for dinner. I don't know.
Steaks.
Their cases were as similar as I could have them. They all in general had putrid gums, the spots and lassitude with weakness of the knees. They lay together in one place, being a proper apartment for the sick in the forehold, and had one diet common to all, viz. Water, gruel, sweetened with sugar in the morning, fresh mutton broth, oftentimes for dinner, at other times light puddings, boiled biscuit with sugar, etc. And for supper, barley and raisins, rice and currants, sago and wine, or the like. Two were ordered each a quart of cider a day. Two others took 25 drops of elixir vitriol three times a day. Two others took 2 spoonfuls of vinegar three times a day. Two of the worst patients were put on a course of seawater. Two others had each 2 oranges and 1 lemon given to them every day. The 2 remaining patients took an electuary recommended by a hospital surgeon. The consequence was that the most sudden and visible good effects were perceived from the use of the oranges and lemons. One of those who had taken them being at the end of 6 days fit for duty. The other was the best recovered of any in his condition and was appointed to attend the rest of the sick. Next to the oranges, I thought the cider had the best effects. My goodness. That is science on the high seas.
That is pretty impressive, though, that like basically he was like, all right, I got a bag of oranges. I got some sugar. I've got some seawater here, some vinegar, and let's split these up and make controlled trials.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you heard their diets. I mean, my
garbage.
God.
Anybody would be sick. I mean, like,
I'd
feel like
putrid gums too.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like when did it, like, it must have been the bleeding gums and stuff was the turning point. Because there's no way, like, these guys weren't, like, brushing their teeth and were like, you know, that's not the case. They were probably missing a few teeth furs.
Yeah. So basically, they are what he did here, what this is describing, is kind of the birth of the clinical trial, the randomized control trial, in a really kind of simple, crude way. It's basically getting a bunch of people who are, he said, similar in many ways. They lay together in one place, etc. They all have the same kind of symptoms. And the only difference in the group is what experimental intervention he gives to them. So he is introducing some kind of experimental effect and then testing to see by comparing, you know, which groups have a basically change in the symptoms. And it allowed him to kind of narrow down the experimental effect that worked, which was the citrus. And later found out that it was actually the vitamin C and lack of vitamin C that's causing scurvy. So basically, this is like the birth of the clinical trial. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a classic experiment on potential scurvy treatments. He, you know, hypothesized that citrus fruit on board were minimizing the risk of scurvy. And this really, like, changed the way that, you know, people would go on these long, long voyages. So May 20th is why we celebrate International Clinical Trials Day, everybody. So
you did not alert me this year, Brett.
No, I did not know, actually, that May 20th, and shame on me. But everyone, add it to your calendars, May 20th. International Clinical Trials Day, and think of James Lind and have an orange juice and raise a glass for those putrid gum fellows that allow us to really be enjoying Operation Warp Speed, because without that we may not have all this.
So now we make the jump from the first clinical trials to the first vaccines question mark.
So The origin story, and not going to go into a lot of history here. It's not a history episode, but it is interesting. was smallpox. So smallpox, we've done an episode on. It was it's an ancient disease that has been a scourge of mankind for all the way back, as long as recorded history, you know, basically can show us. By 430 BC, people had figured out that basically if you've survived smallpox, you are kind of immune to it. So like people weren't getting smallpox like multiple times. So if you survived it, you basically had some resistance or immunity to it. So there were accounts from China and India that indicate that people would try to fight this disease by using a technique called variolation, which basically, and this is a little gross, so just kind of trigger warning here. this involved grinding up smallpox scabs and deliberately infecting someone with the kind of ground up scabs by blowing it up the nostril or scratching it into their skin. This actually caused a milder form of the disease. It was not perfect because it would still get people sick and it still had a 2-3% fatality rate. And the infected people could still pass the disease on. But it was a popular technique up to the 18th century in Europe and the United States. So pretty kind of gross,
bold strategy.
Yeah. Operation, Scabby. Yeah.
Yeah.
Smallpox scabs. So yeah, just picture, you know, cause smallpox causes all these like pustules and like all these kind of gross things on your skin, and just kind of grind that stuff up and blow it up somebody's nose. That was like an old school vaccine for smallpox.
I'm just picturing them using like a turkey baster or something. Like, how are they blowing it up their nose? Like, you know what I mean? Like, how did they get it to like a fine powder? You know, what were they using?
Yeah.
I'm interested.
I don't know. That's a fascinating. That's interesting.
It's like one of those times where you put like a vacuum on like reverse, you know?
Yeah.
And just
yeah.
Send it all back in.
Like, I'm picturing like a spitball, like in school, you know? Like how you.
Oh,
like,
yeah, with a straw. Do you think it was just one person with it in their mouth and they're just like, like through the other end? How's it? How do you think it worked out?
Yeah, I'm picturing that like a straw, and then you just like you ball up a little like ball of scab, and you like get it into a little ball, and you put it in your straw, and you go, and it goes up the nose. Or
do you think
grind
they had
it
to
up
like
in your palm, and then you blow it kind of like a sorcerer, like you're
yeah, them. or the opposite of a sorcerer. And but I wonder if they had to like block their nose afterwards, because immediately if that happened, you'd want to sneeze. That would.
I
have so many questions, people. I've never done a lot of paraphernalia, we'll say.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of questions. So if you have any answers, make sure you send us over what you think they did at viralloadpod@gmail.com.
Oh, was that like a kind of like a Charlie Sheen kind of a thing?
I think so.
Okay. So all this kind of came to an end when in 1796, an English doctor named Edward Jenner showed that you could basically inoculate people by using a weakened strain of cowpox to protect against smallpox. So he would basically take this weakened form of a similar virus, inject it into people, and this method gradually started to replace the kind of ground-up scab method. And because of this, we were able to eradicate smallpox because of this vaccine.
Yeah, so, and if you want to like learn more about that, if you're a new listener, thank you for joining. But if you're interested in learning more about that, we go into detail about that in our second episode ever called Smallpox, Mummies, and Doomsday Preppers.
Yeah.
So go check that out after you're done listening to this one.
Yeah.
Because it is a fun episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So after Dr. Jenner, where do we jump to? Where do we go?
Now I think we want to get into like what are vaccines. So we're not talking about like grinding up scabs and blowing them up people's nose anymore. Like what is a modern like vaccine? What is it that we are putting all our hopes and dreams into? And you know, we need to, I think, kind of understand a little of the 101 here. So we're going to go into like a mild little science lesson. So, basically vaccines work by, kind of tricking or training your immune system to recognize like a pathogen, either like a virus or a bacteria. And you're basically trying to trick the immune system into thinking or recognizing a virus or bacteria, so it will trigger an immune response. So there, that way, when you are actually exposed to like the real virus or bacteria, your immune system's already revved up and already like ready to go. So essentially, you're trying to develop like some kind of molecules from the pathogen called antigens that are the kind of calling cards or the like lock and key mechanism on viruses and bacteria. Because you don't actually want to like, you know, inject people with COVID or inject people with these diseases. You want to like inject people with something that your immune system will recognize and will respond to, but that doesn't actually like get you sick, which is actually, you know, kind of a tricky process. So when you actually inject these, they're called antigens, so little kind of bits of the pathogen into the body, your immune system is trained and learns to recognize them as like foreign invaders. So your immune system produces antibodies and remembers them for the future. Sometimes the memory is short and sometimes it's lifelong. But the idea is that when the real pathogen emerges, the immune system will recognize the antigens immediately and then attack before the pathogen can spread and cause sickness. So it, it really stops it before widespread infection.
Well, that makes sense why you get inoculated for certain things, you know, multiple times versus other things are like a once in a lifetime.
Well, and it, you know, we'll talk about this. It depends on the, like, the pathogen. So there's, you know, lifelong immunity versus, you know, stuff that lasts less than a year. The flu, seasonal flu vaccine, you have to get every year. The reason for that is because the virus, the actual virus, changes. And mutates, and there's different types, so that, you know, those little bits of antigens that you're trying to trick your immune system into, by the time the next flu season comes around, it's a different kind of looking set of antigens, so your immune system no longer would recognize it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that's kind of a vaccines in a nutshell. So basically, what this is trying to do is stop the virus from like getting a foothold. So for example, the flu virus tries to kind of disguise itself when it enters your body because it wants to like attach itself to cells and then take over the cells and turn them into like little virus factories before your immune system has a chance to like know that it's there. So basically it's trying to get into the cell, turn it into a virus factory before your immune system knows what's up. Vaccines basically give your immune system like a head start. They teach your immune system to like recognize it as soon as the pathogen like is in you, so it doesn't have a chance to do that.
Okay,
and that's the vaccine. So any question, boys and girls?
No, but that makes sense to me, because I know like when somebody I work with, or any of the people who work with our patients, get a needle stick or something, because the viruses try to replicate so quickly and they worry that maybe they have, you know, HIV or whatnot in the bloodstream, you know, from the patient, if we haven't tested them or whatever, they get on antivirals immediately because it stops the replication of, you know, DNA or RNA, because that's how obviously the virus will continue to replicate. So it makes sense that we want to like stop that process as soon as humanly possible in all cases, to stop it from continuing to destroy or potentially get you sick.
Yeah, and like we've talked about a little bit like how this happens. It's kind of like a lock and key kind of scenario where like so we've all seen the COVID, the SARS-CoV-2 like picture, you know, what the virus looks like. It has those little like kind of crown spiky things on it. You know, that's what the virus uses to like attach to the host cell. And so it's basically, with a vaccine, you're trying to basically kind of mimic that by not injecting the whole virus, but like that part of it that will, train your immune system.
Okay, and so with the antibodies, do they actually attach to those receptors? Like where it, you know, instead of letting it attach to your, you know, your RNA or DNA to like replicate or the cell, so then the antibodies will instead like glob onto it, kind of like, you know, like you're, I don't know, like a magnet almost, like almost the way that like, you know, I don't know. I've seen like the weird, I'm trying to think of the funny comparison from when I was a kid where you do like the, what is it, your cereal has iron in it or whatever, and so they'd have like the magnet to like pull up the iron, and you'd be like, "Oh my god, it's magnetic!" And you're like, "No, no, 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 that's actually just like the bonding."
I've never done that, really.
Oh,
used to like, you used to put magnets onto your cereal.
So there was like a I used to be like a huge science nerd when I was a kid, and still am because I'm doing this podcast now. So I'm a huge nerd.
You know, come on,
I'm in it now.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, they would show that like certain cereals had iron in them, so there was like a small magnetic pulse. But
that's so cool. I did not know that.
But visually, like it's just reminding me of that. Like basically, all of a sudden, you're able to, you know, make these connections. But the worry about so the thing I would ask is so like visually, my thought process would be then for the flu vaccine every year that crown or that like you know spike changes every year. So, like, your antibodies are not going to actually lock in properly, right?
Right.
So, it'd be like if somebody, like, changed your, you know, the lock on your door every year and you had to get new keys.
Yeah.
And you're just like, damn it. Why does this happen every year?
Yeah, exactly. So, you have to go, like, call a locksmith. And
And the locksmith is you and everybody else who works to try to figure out what a vaccine is going to do.
Yeah. So, we're talking specifically now about antiviral vaccines. So, the vaccines that are meant to trick your body or train your body, well, it's essentially you are tricking your immune system into recognizing specific viruses. So generally, there are two kind of main types. There are gene-based vaccines, which basically deliver these little gene sequences, little bit of genetic material that basically encode for protein antigens that are produced by the host cells. So basically, these are the live virus vaccines or the recombinant vaccine vectors or nucleic acid vaccines. Basically, these are kind of live virus kind of tricksters. And a lot of the worry there is, you know, could the live virus or could that actually like cause infection? So I think a lot of people are worried that like if they get the vaccine, are they actually going to get COVID from the vaccine? I know that like stops a lot of people from getting the flu shot each year because they're afraid that they're like going to get the flu because they hear the word like live virus. But it's a different thing. And then the other is protein-based vaccines, which include whole inactivated viruses. So these are basically like, you know, kind of damaged viruses. So they're like, you know, the whole virus, but they've been disabled, essentially. And this is, you know, the two kind of broad types of vaccines. And I think why this is worth mentioning is because with Operation Warp Speed, we're seeing the development of a kind of a new type of antiviral, which is exciting for some of us, and it's just a thing for others. So let's get into that. Basically, you've probably heard of like the, you know, at this point, everybody's heard of like all the scramble to make the new vaccine. Like there's over 100 vaccine candidates. There's all these companies vying for like, you know, making the next vaccine. And they're not all like the same thing. They're all like taking different approaches. Some of them are making like the traditional like gene-based vaccines. Some are making the protein-based vaccines. The front runner, and we'll get into a little bit more about the front runner, is making a new type of vaccine because, you know, this is Operation Warp Speed, baby. Like we got to make this stuff fast. This is a new type of vaccine that is never before seen in humans. It's perfect for fast spreading viruses, and it's perfect for novel viruses, and that's what the coronavirus is. And these new viruses, or sorry, these new vaccines are called mRNA vaccines. Oh yeah.
Okay.
So
we're in it now. We're in it.
Yeah. And I promise this is the last bit of like microbiology. And then we're going to get into clinical trials.
No, this
trials.
Is good. I don't know if you guys know this, people who are listening. I'm not a doctor. I know you're all flabbergasted right now. Everybody's like, what? I thought you know. But Brett is a doctor. He knows this stuff, you know? So that's why we like to get into this a little bit. We try not to get too much into the weeds, but this is important. This is all stuff that you should want to know about and why you. Hopefully it'll help you not to be so afraid of vaccines if you're out there listening to this and you're afraid of them. Yeah. You know, hopefully this sets you a little bit at ease.
Yeah, so this is basically this is the 101 on what an mRNA vaccine does, what it's all about. So instead of the like standard vaccine route where viral proteins are used to immunize someone, an mRNA vaccine basically introduces a synthetic mRNA of the virus, which is basically like a snippet of its genetic material. The host body then uses this little snippet to actually produce the viral proteins that will be used to trick the immune system. So you're basically kind of skipping a step. So you don't have to like produce the little trickster particles in a lab and then like experiment with them and then introduce them. You're basically like skipping that step and you're just going directly to the host cells and you're making your own body make the little trickster particles.
What I'm picturing is like a 3D printer. Like think about how much like a 3D printer cuts down on costs for doing things. And all of a sudden you want to like build this model and you no longer have to like glue everything together. All of a sudden you can literally just upload this and it replicates whatever you put in it.
Yeah.
Is that kind of where like, is that where you're picturing?
Yeah, like, because so when I say viral proteins, like that's the little spiky thing, you know, on the coronavirus. That's the thing that like your body's immune system recognizes, and that's the thing that you want to like use to mimic the actual virus and to kind of get your immune system going. So the big advantage here is that these type of new vaccines like bypass all the hassle of producing these pure viral proteins, which importantly save months and years, because those can take that long to basically, you know, create in a lab. These mRNA vaccines essentially mimic the natural infection of the virus, but they only contain like a short little synthetic version of the viral genetic material.
Okay, so you don't get sick.
Yeah, and so this little bit of genetic material, so, you know, DNA, RNA are basically little instructions for producing certain types of proteins. So it's only enough virus genetic material to basically create the specific little antigen protein. So you're not giving like the blueprints to build a whole house. You're like giving the blueprints to like build a door, you know?
Okay. Something and obviously like the worry there would just be have to be that, or obviously why this takes time and it's not, you know, something that's going to happen overnight. It's because they have to figure out what's the exact amount. Like, you know, if they too much, it's going to be like wildfire, and not enough is not going to do anything. So you have to figure out, like, to the minutest detail, exactly how much is going to be effective.
Well, so this is actually good because they're really safe to use because you're only, like, introducing, like, a little, like, part of the recipe. Like, you know, your page one of the recipe book.
Yeah, yeah.
This cannot become part of your, like, chromosome, and therefore they're, like, a lot safer. And they're actually a lot safer than like weakened viruses or protein-based vaccines because they do not carry the risk of being injected and then like activating the virus, or like there's no risk of the virus like actually like becoming active and running rampant.
So the real like worry then would be that maybe the body doesn't react and start producing those proteins properly.
Right.
Like that would be the where the failure would be, is exactly. that your body actually doesn't react enough to it in order to build the immunity.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're, you know, if the actual virus is like a gold key to like a, to the door of your cells, you're like trying to produce a crappy knockoff like plastic key that will trick the door lock into being opened, basically.
Yeah, you're credit carding that key,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like that open, and just like jimmying the lock, and it's going, you can get the door open,
yeah.
but it's not the way it was supposed to be planned. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's the trick, is like, how do you, you know, mimic a gold key with a credit card or
yeah,
a
exactly.
Q-tip or whatever the hell.
Yeah.
So that's it for the biology. That's kind of vaccine 101. So that's the one type. That's the new kind of vaccine that's in production. But like I said, there's also the more traditional types. Because at this point, again, new virus, never before seen. We don't know what's going to work and what's not. So there's a whole bunch of different, you know, types of vaccines being produced. The one thing that they all have to go through, though, is this development cycle. So basically from soup to nuts or nuts to soup or whatever, like from start to finish, how do you go from just like some test tubes and like beakers and Bunsen burners or whatever in a lab to like, you know, putting something in a shot and injecting it into someone's, you know, arm or whatever. All vaccines, whether they're mRNA or whatever, have to follow a development cycle. And traditionally, this can take like decades. It is expensive, it is long, and oftentimes the candidate vaccines don't make it through the development cycle, because the whole point of it is to weed out basically vaccines that are not safe, that could potentially cause weird side effects, or vaccines that don't work. So that's what the whole like development cycle is intended to do, is like identify safe and effective vaccines.
Yeah,
so,
well,
that's,
I mean,
what Operation Warp Speed is. It's like turbocharging this whole process.
Well, and I know, and it's an expensive process too. Like, that's
yeah.
another thing. Like, this is not cheap. It's much like medications for certain things. Why we haven't seen research move forward in certain areas is because, like, there's not a lot of money to be made, you know, for certain things. You can't capitalize on certain medications for certain small illnesses. But this is such a global event now
yeah.
that literally there's billions of dollars flowing in to fix, try to get this done.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, for this to stop, again, we need to achieve 70% herd immunity. So going back to my burning field analogy, like 70% of the empty field needs to be mowed down or, you know, eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's going to take. So what that translates to is a crapload of virus, well, we already have a crapload of virus, a crapload of
got plenty of it.
So, the really kind of quick overview of like this development cycle, because we're only going to focus on one part of it. God, I sound like I'm in class again, whatever. Okay, so you start with the exploratory stage. Basically, it is mucking around with stuff under a microscope. Let's just mm-hmm. keep it at that. You're looking for little possible candidates for the vaccine. You're looking for really the kind of just microbiology, think white lab coats, looking at a microscope kind of stuff, okay? Then you enter the preclinical stage where you're starting to test these experimental little compounds on like living things like mice or monkeys. Then you enter into clinical development, which is what where we are right now with the COVID stuff. Then there's regulatory review and approval, and then you have to figure out a way to mass produce it and do it in a way that, you know, is safe and effective. But what we're going to focus on is this clinical development side of things. So basically you're starting with like, you know, Bunsen burners and beakers and, you know, standard laboratory kind of just figuring out, okay, what might potentially stop a virus, to like, let's see if this thing actually works and doesn't kill people.
Yeah, we're getting off the smear slides and getting it onto actual, you know, whether it be animals or people.
Yeah. So if you think you have a potential, you know, thing that could, you know, actually help people, it makes it into the phases of clinical trials. And the candidates only make it this far if they're showing promise that they're actually going to, you know, do something. So they are tested in like preclinical research to see like, you know, do they elicit an immune response? Do they do like kind of on paper what they're supposed to do? Like, you know, simulated experimental conditions, do they like kind of appear to do what they're supposed to do? Then they go into the clinical phase. So all this preclinical stuff is not done with people. It is, you know, injecting stuff into cells and all kind of under a microscope, like I said. But if it looks like it's, you know, it might do something, then we start testing it on actual human beings, or I guess they become human doings at that point.
Yeah.
So there are a couple of phases that you go through. Phase zero of Operation Warp Speed. Warp Drive.
It could have been either one.
Oh, man.
That was really close to being it.
Yeah, seriously.
Data was like very upset that didn't get through.
Yeah, yeah. So phase zero is the first kind of step that is done among people. It is basically like looking at what does it do when it's given to a person? Like how is the drug processed? How is it metabolized? These are really, really small trials. They're given in a really small dose to a group of 10 to 15 people.
Yeah, this is where people become lab rats, where 10 to 15 mm-hmm. people sign up to get paid a few hundred dollars to find out if their blood is going to mix well with whatever this is.
So it's like, oh, well, it didn't kill the monkeys and the rats. Let's see what it does to this group of people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, usually they're, you know, confident enough that it's not going to, like, kill you. What they're basically just trying to do is, like, what kind of reaction does it, you know, do with people.
Mm-hmm.
So once it gets past this phase, it hasn't killed anybody and it looks like it actually might be you know, starting some fires or doing some stuff, they send it into phase one. And phase one is basically looking at, okay, in phase zero we just gave a tiny little bit just to see like under a microscope what it does to people. Now we're going to start ramping up the dose and we're going to start experimenting with like different combination of doses to see which combination of doses basically produces the fewest side effects. So, you know, you don't just go from like just like a ton of, you know, vaccine to like a tiny little bit. You want to see like what's the sweet spot, because you don't want to like just unnecessarily give too much.
That's pretty interesting. I've never even like, it's so ridiculous and I sound like a big dum-dum-dum, but I've never even thought about that. Like the fact that like Tylenol doesn't just come in 325 milligrams. Like, like somebody was like, that's the spot. That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
But yeah, like, so if like, you know, 15 milligrams or whatever is enough to cause an immune response, you wouldn't give 150 or whatever.
Yeah, because obviously there's probably more side
chances
effects
for like side effects or whatever.
Gotcha.
So that's what they're doing now, is they're basically like, okay, where's the kind of sweet spot? Where's like the amount that we should be giving? So this again is a really small group of people. It's like 15 to 30 patients. They start by usually giving really low doses to just a few, and then they give higher doses to some other patients to kind of compare the side effects and to see you know, basically to compare, you know, low dose versus high dose and just look for kind of differences. They may start, you know, this may start producing like the desired effects, but really, and the desired effects meaning it prevents COVID, but this is really all about just like, is it safe and is it going to like cause people to turn into like polka dot, purple haired, you know, octopus armed, whatever. You know, is it safe? So if it's determined that, okay, it's not going to kill people or turn people into like, you know, purple people eaters, it goes on to phase two.
Gotcha. As long as it's not going to be an I Am Legend situation, they're like, hey, we can move on.
Yeah, actually, that's a good analogy. So if you've ever seen I Am Legend, hopefully you have. It's a good movie. It's solid,
yeah, it's solid
zombie apocalypse.
Solid all the
movie.
Way through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plausible. Yeah, that's essentially. Ooh, note to self. I might play that for class. Okay. So, little look behind the curtain there of the life of a mad professor. So on to phase two. Okay, it hasn't killed anybody and turned people into I Am Legend zombies. This is further assessing safety, and now we're starting to really look at, like, is this thing actually going to do what it's supposed to do? Is it actually going to work? So now you're getting larger groups of patients. This is where you are starting to now look at, does this actually prevent COVID infection? This is still a relatively small group, but it's really for the first time looking at, like, okay, compared to, like, a placebo, does this actually prevent COVID? All the while still testing for, you know, safety, making sure it doesn't turn people into zombies. Now, once it looks like it's producing an effect, it goes on to phase three. And this is where it gets exciting, because this is where it could become a actual, like, candidate vaccine. Or, you know, go from a candidate vaccine to like actually something, you know, distributed to the masses. And this is where, if you've been reading about in the news or whatever about, like, you know, the vaccines that are most promising right now, these are the ones that are in phase three. So phase three trials are looking for, again, side effects. These are bigger trials where you're talking hundreds of patients. They are randomized, meaning essentially you are randomly splitting people. Let's say you enroll a group of 1,000 patients, flip a coin essentially, and you say, okay, heads or tails. Heads, you get a placebo, you get a sugar shot or you know, a fake, and tails, you get the COVID vaccine candidate.
Okay.
Totally random. That's what the randomized in the randomized control trial means.
But in the control portion would be that, like, if there's a population, say, of 1,000 people that they're doing this on, each one, like, each third of that is split up into different, you know, different racial, like, background, diversity, all that, and making sure each one of those groups has the same amount of those people, correct? Like, to make sure that we're catching that?
That's actually the interesting thing here is, like, the best way to ensure that, like, the groups are the same, because think about what you're looking for. You want to know if the vaccine actually does something, if it actually works. So you want to compare it to a group of people that do not have the vaccine, that have a placebo, and you want to be confident that at the end of the trial you're saying it's the vaccine that did something, and not the fact that, well, one group, like, just smoked a lot more, or one group had way more, like, healthcare workers in it, or, you know, restaurant workers. You want to know that both groups look the same, right? Same age, same number of people whose favorite color is blue, like, whatever. And
okay.
The best way to do that is to just flip a coin and
okay.
randomly split people. And if you do that enough times, just by statistics, by chance, things are just going to even out.
Okay.
And you're going to have two groups that look more or less the same.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Yeah,
that's
but it's kind of cool, because it's like, you know, how fancy and how much money all this stuff is, but it just comes down to randomly splitting people, like heads or tails. And you do it enough times, and you're going to have two groups that look very similar, because the only difference is one group gets a vaccine, one group gets a fake.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
So this is phase three. And basically what you're looking for is, you're enrolling people. Nobody has COVID. You're randomly split them. So you have similar looking groups. Nobody knows who is getting the vaccine. So this is the, if you've seen the term blinded or double blinded, if I am a patient in the study, I don't know whether I've gotten the actual vaccine or not. Either way, I'm getting a shot and I don't know what's in it. Because if you know that you're getting like the COVID shot, it could cause you to like change your behavior, right? Compared to someone who knows they're getting a placebo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the same as like people who are working with COVID patients. Like if you know you're working with COVID positive patients, you might have a few moments where you're freaking out in the morning when you're just tired and exhausted and your throat's a little sore.
Right.
If you think you're working in, you know, Gen Pop, you might not have that anxiety and that issues that those other people are having.
Yeah, exactly. So the patients never know, and usually the people giving the shot or the researchers don't know either. So that's the double blinded. Nobody knows. You have some like third party keeping track of all this stuff, or hope so. And that creates the like least biased kind of fairest kind of way of doing this.
Okay.
You've enrolled people, you've given one group the vaccine, one group the placebo, and you just follow over time and you say, okay, go about your business, go do your thing, check in however often, every week or so, report any side effects that you're having, and that's basically it. And then at the end of the study period, you're saying, okay, who got COVID and who didn't? And you then compare the groups. The vaccine is declared a success if the vaccine group has less COVID than the placebo group. And if there's a big enough difference there, you can say, okay, the vaccine prevents COVID, and then boom, we're ready to go.
So wait, would you say that the vaccine group had less COVID or more of the proof of the antibodies? Like how would you measure
antibodies that it's actually like tricking your immune system into doing something has been like established at this point. So that's the earlier phases where you're looking for, does this actually like, fool the immune system into doing something? Because if it didn't, there would be no point in like, giving it to hundreds and thousands of patients in these clinical trials. So at this point, we've established that like, yes, this does fool the immune system into doing something. Now we just need to know, like, does when the rubber hits the road, does it actually like prevent the virus transmission, or did it just look good on paper? Like when it comes to like now real life, does it actually work?
Okay.
So again, there are way more like candidate vaccines that fail and don't make it this far because, for example, you start seeing like strange side effects. And if a drug is producing like, strange side effects, if the vaccine group is reporting like all these weird symptoms, they'll stop the trial and the drug will be thrown in the trash can of history. But as long as like, there's no unequal weird side effects, they continue to run the study. And where we're at right now with COVID is the drug candidates are still going into phase three, meaning that they haven't caused any weird side effects yet.
That's great.
That's good.
That's promising.
Yeah. So there is no way to like fast forward this part though. Like you are giving people this vaccine and then you just have to follow them over time to see who gets COVID and who doesn't, because you can't go like crop dusting one group and spraying them with COVID and seeing what happens. You just have to like let them go about their business.
Well, and you would think that like in this case, there's probably a little bit of variable there that you have to deal with. But again, probably I'm sure with stats would show out that maybe like they that each group is probably has the propensity to be exposed to COVID the same amount.
Exactly.
That if they're working, they're taking from the same population in order to probably mitigate those issues.
And if you randomized properly, the two groups should look the same. So it doesn't matter what the potential like confounder is. Like, you know, so we know that being obese, for example, is a risk factor. So you wouldn't want like your placebo group to have like a way higher obesity rate than your vaccine group. You want them to be the same. And the best way to do that is to just, you know, randomly split them. And, you know, same proportion of restaurant workers, same proportion of people that smoke, et cetera.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah.
So what is happening as part of Operation Warp Speed is they are kind of allowing some of these phases to be run, like, simultaneously. So they're like, starting phase two, and then they're starting phase three before, like, phase two has, like, officially stopped. But they're not like, they're not skipping steps. They're just kind of like overlapping them, which is fine. It's riskier in terms of like wasting time and money, I think, or wasting money or something, but you know, we're basically just throwing dump trucks full of money at this right now. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. In all phases of life, we're just throwing money at this thing. So I mean, we might as well do it in a capacity where we actually might find something good at the end of the rainbow instead of just literally lighting cash on fire.
Yeah, exactly. So the phase three is what you need to pass to become approved by the FDA. And then we have a successful COVID vaccine. Then what happens is the last phase is called phase four. So this is where you have like thousands of patients enrolled, and this is where you're following people over like really long time periods, like several years, because now you want to see are there like really rare or weird side effects that occur only in small groups of people or that take a long time to show up. That's what's going to get found out in phase four, but we don't wait for that to be finished before we will announce a successful candidate for COVID.
Okay.
But, you know, if your phase three trial only has 1,000 patients, and let's say for the sake of argument that the COVID vaccine causes some weird like reaction in like 0.001% of the population, chances are that's going to get missed in the phase three trial. And the only way to like identify that is with a really, really big group of people over a really long period of time. But we can't wait for that. So the FDA approves after phase three and then keeps phase four running. If they find something weird in phase four long-term, they'll pull the drug from the market.
Okay.
But that's the risk we run.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that with a polio vaccine where they pulled one version of the vaccine after they saw that there were side effects from the attenuated live virus. So,
but I mean, again, that's like for really, really rare cases.
Yeah, and, yeah. And I mean,
basically, you know, we should all sleep. If I read that a vaccine has gone through phase three and it's been a well-designed study and all that stuff, like I'm getting the vaccine right away.
Yeah, me too.
Because that's another thing that I hear often is people say, like, well, do you really want to be the first one to get it? Like, when it becomes available, don't you want to, like, wait a little bit and see what happens? Well, like, we've already been giving it to people. Like, once it becomes approved, you're not going to be the first one to get it because it's been running through clinical trials and they've been testing it on people. So it doesn't matter and it doesn't make sense to wait a few months. Like, you're not going to be the first person. That's what the whole point of clinical trials is. So it's okay. Don't worry. Uncle Brett's here to tell you it's going to be okay. Uncle Dr. Brett. So this whole process, all these phases, all this kind of stuff, again, very long, very difficult, usually measured in decades. But on account of the Rona, the goal is a large-scale distribution of virus or vaccine before the end of 2020 or 2021.
That's fast. We're talking next 4 months. They're trying to get this thing out there, distributed, and in people's bodies before, you know, before we all watch the ball drop.
Yep. Yep. So, most new vaccines take 10 to 15 years to hit the market. The fastest ever was the vaccine developed for the mumps, which took 4 years in the 1960s. So the word unprecedented is kind of annoying, but it is.
Well, and truly. I mean, to another thing to kind of calm people's nerves, the mumps vaccine was extremely successful, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it doesn't mean that because this is rapid that it's going to fail. I mean, it just has, again, it has way more funding and way more research going into this. So, I mean,
like urgency and all this stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, you have to have everyone buying in, everyone caring, and everyone throwing dump trucks full of money at it. And that's what allows this to really ramp up. It's not that a bunch of corners and it's not that it's being slopped through. It's just that it's being given an insane amount of attention.
Well, and I would expect the exact opposite actually, because so much money is being funneled into it. There's probably way more watchdog groups and people actually overseeing this to make sure that they're not cutting any corners. Because if you're giving somebody $100 million to be the first company to come up with a vaccine, you don't want them skipping phase two and jumping to phase three so that they can be the first ones to phase four. It's not going to happen.
Well, and nobody wants to risk putting and approving a vaccine that is going to kill people or not going to work, because then you're completely blowing up public trust and we're never going to get herd immunity that way. For this thing to get green lit, we need to feel comfortable that it's going to do what it's going to do. And, if it follows these steps, these steps work, they're proven to work. In there 100 years ago, we used to die of infectious diseases and we used to not have very long life expectancy because of smallpox and all these other infectious diseases. We don't really worry about that as much anymore. And it's all because of vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
So it works. They work. They follow these steps. If they're followed properly, these steps work. I would feel very comfortable if it went through this process, that it's good to go. So, that's kind of Operation Warp Speed in a nutshell. I think when we compare it to the flu very quickly, I don't want to go into how flu shots are made, because that's an interesting enough story for another episode. Because the flu it's kind of funny. It does involve hot air balloons, but maybe a little teaser for another episode. But just as a basis for comparison, the seasonal flu shot is around 40 to 60% effective. This last flu season, the vaccine was about 50% effective. The best vaccine ever made was for measles, and that was that provided 97% immunity. For COVID, we are happy hitting a 70% mark. So if it establishes immunity in at least 70% of the population, that's what we're looking for. That is kind of the magic number that will stop the pandemic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm for it.
So the race is on. It's those carnival, that carnival game, where you're got the squirt gun thing and you're watching little horses go.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. But it is more than 150 little horses. Yeah. 150 coronaviruses, vaccines, more than that, are in development across the world. And the goal is to deliver 2 billion doses by the end of 2021.
So is 2 billion, is that 70%? That's that mile marker?
Well, so the whole vaccine process, we're not going to get into, the development or the like kind of ramping it up in the large scale distribution and stuff, you know, is, you know, time consuming, and that's a whole nother kind of can of worms. But like realistically, can you like produce and then distribute? Like, you know, you also need to like get these into clinics and get them, you know, distributed. And, you know, some places in the world that's easier said than done. But that's kind of the goal, is like 2 billion. And that's kind of like, would help us get to that sweet spot number. Yeah.
Cool.
So, you know, Operation Warp Speed is launched by the U.S. government, of course, because it's got that like kind of comic book sounding kind of name, very Space Force esque. Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. Basically, the U.S. government pledged, speaking of throwing money at it, $10 billion, because they want to deliver 300 million. Doses of the vaccine by January of 2021.
Okay. That would be the majority of the U.S. pop. So
yeah.
I mean, that would be huge. And like, you think about
January,
it, like because we've already had so many cases in the United States, that extra portion is probably covered by the people who have already had the virus. However, I mean, knowing what we know that maybe there's a chance that simply having the virus previously, we don't know yet how long that's going to last, the immunity, but
yeah. Well, and that's still kind of the I guess question left to be answered is like, when your body does produce an immune response, like how long is it good for? How long before your immune system forgets about that and, you know, you get reinfected?
Yeah, but I mean, irregardless, we need the vaccine. Like, you know, even if it is something like the flu vax, where it's going to be a yearly thing, we at least need the first version in order to get things rolling.
Yep. From what I understand, the virus is not like mutating all that quickly, relatively. So that's kind of score one for the good guys. And you know, Operation Warp Speed not only is designed to like accelerate this whole like, you know, vaccine development, but also like the manufacturing, distribution, diagnostics, all this kind of stuff. And this is like a huge collaboration between like the CDC, the FDA, the Department of Defense, and all these other government agencies. It started off with 125 potential vaccine candidates. So this is like all the, you know, little compounds that were being looked at in the lab under a microscope. They were able to rapidly narrow down the list of candidates to 14 in May of 2020. And as of June 2020, the plan was to narrow it down to 5 core candidates. And that's what we're looking for now. Is 8 vaccines in phase 3 right now, who's going to be the winner? And if you guys are fancy enough to subscribe to the New York Times, the coronavirus vaccine tracker on the New York Times is a fun and fantastic resource, because basically this is like a play-by-play, up-to-date, like, where are we now in all of this?
And it's super palatable too. Somebody who, like, yes, I enjoy science, but sometimes it does get to be, you get in the weeds and you're just like, what is happening here? They break it down really nicely, and everything is done in like super, cool, like designs and everything. So it's really palatable for everyone. So I would say check it out. We'll put it in our show notes so you can go over there if you do have the New York Times and check it out.
But they report 135 plus vaccines not yet in human trials, so that's preclinical. 19 in phase 1, 11 are currently in phase 2, 8, like I said, are in phase 3. And then there is one that's been approved for limited use in China, and I believe this is strictly approved for Chinese military. The One that I wanted to kind of like focus on, and this is like the front runner as of like now, is the Moderna Therapeutics mRNA 1273 vaccine candidate that basically is using this like fancy new mRNA, type vaccination, which essentially relies on injecting little snippets of the virus's genetic material, aka mRNA, into human cells. This then allows viral proteins to be made that mimic the coronavirus but are not actually the coronavirus. This then trains the immune system to recognize the presence of these imposter coronavirus particles. Again, this has never been licensed for any human disease, and if it's successful, will be the first mRNA vaccine approved for human use. So Yay. Isn't that kind of fun and exciting?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And you think about like mRNA 1273, most likely that means that's the number that they landed on, right? So like 1272 was a failure. 1271 was a failure. You know, like
I mean,
that's
I have no idea. That would be
that'd be insane. Like I'm just gonna go with that, everyone. I'm just gonna say that they got all the way up to 1272, and then I'm just picturing what is that, the scene in like the Nutty Professor or whatever, where he continues to give all the hamsters the same thing over and over again, and he's like 996 failure, and then you finally get there. So
it's probably something like that, where they just have like racks and racks and racks of test tubes, and they're all labeled different things, much like that zombie movie. What were we just talking about?
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend. Yeah, he was kind of like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and then there's the one tube.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, ooh, I think I got something. It turned my little like crazy zombie rat into a normal rat or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Don't want to spoil that movie. It's good though.
It's fantastic.
So Moderna started on July 27th. They had started phase 3 clinical trials while still continuing phase 2. The preliminary results from phase 1 have been published, and they show that healthy subjects that were given this vaccine produced coronavirus antibodies, and you know, basically their immune system had a response. This is now on to phase 3, where they are currently testing the vaccine in 30,000 participants in the United States. If all things go according to plan, Moderna is on track to deliver 500 million doses per year starting in 2021. And they have kind of collaborated with some other vaccine manufacturers, and their goal is to hit 1 billion doses a year. So that's some Jeff Bezos numbers.
Yeah, Billions. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. So they set a bunch of records in doing all this because this is Operation Warp Speed. They went from basically having a little particle, little baby pre-vaccine to human trials, and that only took 63 days. To make it the front runner. They published their results preliminarily from human trials in May, and the big headline-grabbing thing was these produced neutralizing antibodies, which means that this little snippet of fake virus tricked the human immune system in producing neutralizing antibodies. And that's a big deal. So now they're doing the whole randomized clinical trial on 30,000 people. So when you say like, oh, I'm nervous to be the first one to get it, well, more than 30,000 people have already gotten it.
And I'm sure you're not the first one in line to be the 30,000th and one. You're not.
Well,
gonna be
actually, I don't know how many of those were placebo and how many of those were experimental, but thousands and thousands have gotten it. And they've been followed, and so far, no weird results have been reported, as far as I know. Because if they had, they would stop the trials. These trials are going on across 89 different sites in 30 states across this country of ours, and they are looking to see whether two doses of the mRNA vaccine prevent people from catching COVID-19, and to also see if you do get COVID-19, does this reduce your risk of dying from it? So does it prevent you from getting it and or prevent you from dying of it?
Okay, so that does that well, mean that more. Some yeah, of their more. Clinical trials are on people who have COVID currently?
Well, I think they're looking for, because, you know, you can get the flu shot, for example, and still get the flu. Mm-hmm. But if you get the flu shot and get the flu, usually it's a milder form of disease.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I got the flu shot this last year, and I still got the flu.
Same.
But I've had the flu a few different times, and this one only lasted a few days, and usually the flu lasts a lot longer than that. So, like, the goal is to make COVID less deadly. Well, the goal is to prevent it, but also to make it less deadly for those that it's not 100% effective for.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So that's Moderna, and that's what they're doing. So that's the kind of the candidate du jour, and whether this will actually, like, you know, do anything, TBD, but just like for all of our anti-vax friends that are, you know, nervous, and that, you know, rightfully so, this is the question I get all the time is like, is this going to be safe? Are we going to, like, turn into zombies? You know, what's going to happen? Again, if it's made it through the phase 3 trial, I feel good, and I'm going to be, you know, waiting in line. But, you know, we need public buy-in because, again, we are not going to achieve herd immunity. We're not going to stop the pandemic if just a patchwork group of people decide to buy in. Like, we need everybody to. So what makes me nervous is the kind of debacle of face masks, and that's just a little bit of cloth over your, you know, face. Like, now we're going to be talking about an experimental new shot that's injected into your body. What kind of weird public reaction is that going to bring? I'm going to guess it's going to be contentious. Just going to guess that. But in order to achieve herd immunity, like, we got to have everybody buy in, and we got to have people vaccinate, because, you know, whether or not I choose to get the vaccine, that affects me, but that also affects the herd immunity.
Yeah. And I mean, and I, so to like put in perspective, we did see in 2018 to 2019 was one of the more deadly flu seasons. And we saw 45.3% of adults refuse the vaccine. And inversely, because adults have children, they actually had 62.2% of children opt out of the vaccine as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, you know, it shows out. If you refuse it and we lower the herd immunity, we're putting everybody at risk. So, mm-hmm. But how do we fix this? Like, what's going on? You know, like, how do we get people moving forward with this, you know?
I mean, so that's what makes me nervous is, like, we in public health, like, are, you know, I am always just, like, pretty amazed each year with the flu season, like, how many people are, like, you know, don't get the flu shot for various reasons. You know, again, the magic number is 70%. And there was a survey done in May that basically asked people, would you get the, you know, vaccine when it becomes available? And they found that about 50% of respondents say that they would, and that is not going to do it.
Yeah, it's not going to get us there. Yeah. It might slow things down, but it's not going to get us there.
But if you want, like, a world without coronavirus, 50% buy-in is not going to do it.
Yeah.
If you know someone who's on the fence or whatever, like, I mean, like, everybody's got to get it, because some people do have legitimate medical reasons for, like, not being able to get one. So, like, literally 100% of the population can't get it.
Yeah.
So you're getting it not just for you, but for that person who can't get it. That's why they call it herd immunity. Like, it's doing it for the herd.
Exactly.
Don't just think about you, the single cow. It's about the whole herd. Come on.
Yeah.
Move on up.
Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest issues, and this is the rabbit hole we like to go down.
This is fun.
This is the fun part. So we've gotten through the science. We've talked through the phases and what's going to happen and what we need to happen. But what is going to muck up all that stuff? So
what's those 50% who don't want to get it? Like, what's going on in their heads?
Yeah. So we all know an anti-vaxxer, whether it's an aunt or an uncle or a sibling or a friend or a coworker or the lady at the store who yelled at Brett that the world isn't going to end and that he should take off his mask, or, you know. And so I compiled the top 10 list of conspiracy theories and myths that anti-vaxxers have been spreading quite a while now. And we're going to go into a little bit of history on the anti-vaxxers because, spoiler alert, they've been around for a really, really long time.
Hmm.
So right now, these are the top 10 lists of things that anti-vaxxers are saying. First off, blaming 5G. Because, Brett, 5G towers are the reason why this is happening. Yeah. So much so that 5G towers over the UK were all burned to the ground. So that's fun. And then immediately those people pulled out their phones to tell their friend about it and could not get reception. And then we had Bill Gates is microchipping us to control for population control.
Classic.
That's a big one. That's got a lot of backing. The virus escaped a Chinese lab. Number four, COVID was created as a biological weapon. Number five, the U.S. military actually imported COVID-19 to China.
Oh.
Six, GMOs are somehow to blame, although not consensus as to how, but Monsanto. Number seven, COVID-19 doesn't actually exist.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
What
are we all looking at then?
Yeah. The pandemic is being manipulated by the deep state.
Ooh.
COVID is a plot by Big Pharma. And finally, COVID death rates are inflated.
Okay.
So those are the top 10 theories we're dealing with right now. So you can see where we have an uphill battle here. And it's not just a few people. The World Health Organization back in February warned us of a possible infodemic. We talked about that actually on prior episodes about the COVID updates and everything, what's going on. But the infodemic has become a reality. Just 3 months afterwards, we had the plandemic.
Which I still haven't seen.
Don't. I've had to watch it now twice in order to do research for our podcast. And I promised you, you are a doctor. You need to keep the brain cells. I will keep dumbing myself down with this content. So what is infodemic and why was it such a big thing? Okay. So first off, it's a huge thing for conspiracies. Like, people love conspiracies. People do not like simplistic things to solve problems. Yeah. They just don't, that you can't wrap your head around things. You know, so Infodemic was basically a YouTube interview with doctor or actually not even doctor, I don't believe at this point, Judy Mikovits. I think I'm saying that right. Mikovits or Mikovits. She was a biochemist whose 2009 paper on the causes of chronic fatigue syndrome was retracted from the Journal of Science after no one could replicate the findings, and they were shown to be a result of laboratory contamination. Basically, in layman's terms, she falsified documentation in order to make it seem like she knew what she was talking about. And that was retracted, and she actually ended up having to admit that she had manipulated her science, basically. So that's the person we're dealing with right now who got literally hundreds of millions of people to watch this YouTube video. So what damage did they do? So the question is, like, all right, crap. Like, what did she tell people that they thought was a thing? Because I work in medical, and I'm not a doctor by any means. And I got this sent to me by dozens of people asking me about this because I do work with COVID patients. And I stopped answering people after a while. I was just like, this is not worth the conversation. So then I had to go dive in myself. So first off, her first claim is masks actually activate the coronavirus. Her stance was wearing the mask literally activates your own virus. You're getting sick from your own reactivated coronavirus expressions. And if it happens to be SARS-CoV-2, then you've got a big problem. Okay. So Brett, so if you've already got a virus in your body, we've just been talking about how things work. It's already there. It's already in your body. So Marsha Wills Karp of the chair of environmental health and engineering at Johns Hopkins and Bloomberg School of Public Health said, this claim just doesn't make any sense. She doesn't know anything about immunity if she thinks that breathing in an inoculum, the virus, you already have in your nose is going to somehow change your exposure. If your immune system has seen it, you've either mounted a protective response or you haven't.
Yeah, it's not like just hiding or, I don't quite get it. So like, if you only have like a few particles in your nose, like somehow this is like blowing it out into your mask and then it like causing a virus cloud and then it goes back in you and like,
yeah, exactly. Like she thinks that because you can like taste your bad breath, that's the virus. Yeah. Apparently.
She's just salty because she's got coffee breath.
Yeah, exactly. But her second claim, and we're just going to go through the top four here because there was so much outlandishness, but these are the ones that really could hurt us moving forward. So the second one was that Italy was hit the hardest by coronavirus because their flu vaccine this year was grown in dog cells. Yeah. So basically, they stated that this is not true. That when they looked at the coronavirus strain that was in Italy was the same exact that originated from China. So that's false. And when they studied that strain, it was shown to be closely related to bat coronavirus and not one that came from dogs. So so number two, canceled.
So basically, like the virus has been shown, like you can trace it back to a natural source.
Exactly. And they've talked ad nauseum about that, about the fact that it's not man-made. And the reason why it's not man-made is because we can track all of these things and it has certain markers that show this is from animal X, you know.
Yeah.
So third claim, and this is a big one, and this is going to hurt people for a long time if they listen to this. Ooh. Vaccines don't work and they kill people. Despite claiming not to be anti-vaccine, Mikovits again pushes anti-vax tropes by saying that a new coronavirus vaccine will kill millions. She says there is no vaccine currently on schedule for any RNA virus that works. So our friend over there, Miss Wilkes Karps, says this is a ridiculous claim. Some of the most successful and greatest success stories in vaccines or vaccine history are against RNA viruses. For instance, polio, measles, which we said was 97% effective, and yellow fever, also RNA. So she goes on to say, people are literally studying the yellow fever vaccine because it's such a good vaccine. And it offers lifetime protection. You know how we're talking about vaccines that might not be so popular because you have to get them every single year? The yellow fever vaccine, one of these RNA vaccines, is good for life.
Yeah, and you need to show proof of it to get into some countries.
Exactly, so yeah. And so finally, and this one's a fun one, she stated, it's ridiculous that we're closing beaches because microbes and sequences on the beach are healing. Healing microbes are in salt water, sequences in soil and sand. To this, Wills Karp said, I don't know what she's talking about.
I don't either. I don't get that.
Yeah. Like, and so what she basically was saying that she thinks that Mikovits is trying to tell, like trying to play on the fact that people know that being exposed, like a little kid playing in a sandbox, where like it's good for them to be exposed to the dirt because dirt don't hurt. But what she doesn't get is that what she's saying makes no sense because there are no healing microbes against coronavirus in the dirty dirt at the beach.
I get it. So it's like, you know, those like parents that like don't let their kids play in the dirt and all that stuff because they're not like giving their immune system a chance to like, you know, become robust or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, like if you pop Bubble Boy's bubble, he's going to die. And so that's why you shouldn't keep your kids in a bubble.
And because the ocean is essentially just a gigantic soup of viruses, we shouldn't close the beaches because we're denying ourselves that like playing in the dirt potential. We should be out there bathing in the viruses to allow our immune systems to become robust.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But,
yeah.
So that's Infodemic. So that was Miss Mikovits giving a lot of people a lot of false information.
Well, I'm angry just hearing about it. So yeah, I don't think I want to see it.
Yeah. So and again, we're based in science here. So this isn't me making up stuff. This is literally scientists from around the world disproving these theories. So the next biggest one that I want to dive into, and this one was interesting to me because honestly, yeah, Bill Gates might be a billionaire and billionaires are bad, but by and large,
jealous.
Yeah. But like by and large, like what has he done? Like every time I tried to find definitive answers for what Bill Gates have done wrong in the world, there was always like, but maybe whatever. So, the conspiracy theory here is that he's trying to microchip us all. And like that's pretty sinister. So like, where did this come from? And you'll be happy to report this actually started with the Russian Communist Party. Ooh. So the head of the Russian Communist Party said that basically Bill Gates and globalists were supporting a covert mass chip implantation, which they may in time resort to under the pretext of mandatory vaccination against coronavirus. Basically saying that under the guise of coronavirus, they're going to start chipping all of us. And so Roger Stone, former advisor of Donald Trump and now acquitted man, he's out on the lam now, said that they were using the virus for microchipping people so we can tell whether you've been tested or not. Again, as far as I know, Roger Stone, not a scientist, but does wear quite the bowler hat if you've seen him. But doesn't know much about that.
Beautiful, beautiful man.
So, again, one of these weird polls where people were like, oh, what do they think about Bill Gates? 1,640 people suggest, a poll of 1,640 people suggest 28% of Americans believe that Bill Gates wants to use the vaccine to implant microchips, with the figure rising to 44% amongst the people who are registered to vote Republican. So not great if we're trying to get to that 70% and 44% of the population is saying, hey, you know, or 28% is saying, like, nah, he's going to microchip us. Not good. Especially
we all carry cell phones around. Like, why would you come up with this whole elaborate thing? I mean, if someone did want to track you, they're already doing it. Like, cell phones, GPS, it's all we're done.
I can't say this enough. When comedy used to exist, I used to do a bit about the fact that you've all been tagged and released. They gave you a social security number that you have to use for everything at birth. And you use it for every big thing in your life. When you're filing your taxes, they follow you. When you're buying things, they follow you. When you go to school, they follow you. When you buy a house, it all is tagged back to that original tag that just because you don't have it on your body, you act like you don't have this like digital certificate, but it's there. They tagged you and released you. You're a fish that like has a scar in its lip and doesn't remember that it got caught once. Like you're not immune to it.
It's so like unnecessarily complicated to like devise a pandemic and like all this stuff for that purpose. Like say they did want to have this nefarious plot for whatever reason to microchip you. I don't know, whatever. I mean, they're already doing it to see like what advertisements they want to sell you when you like Google something.
Exactly. And so a lot of this was given a little bit of credence because of Bill Gates himself. He's such a techie that he was talking about in the future, we will have some digital certificates basically saying that somehow they'll know who is accepting vaccines or not. But I believe they were stating that in the fact that like if somebody was administered to a hospital, it would be on their permanent record, basically, that they did that. But because people are like, he said digital certificate, that means implementation of microchipping. So he didn't help himself on that one.
Well, and it's like, you know, when I want to travel to another country and I have to show proof that I got a yellow fever vaccine and I have to carry that little like vaccine card with me. Like,
yeah,
that, you know, that's it's the same kind of idea.
And so adding fuel to that fire, a UK-based Twitter account said Bill Gates admits to the vaccine will no doubt kill 700,000 people. And links to a video with the conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, he's a good guy, that claims that, and by the way, this is how rapidly misinformation, it's to the point where now, I mean, we've all seen now, Twitter is starting to censor things. You've seen people on Facebook sharing things that a couple days later it says, sorry, this is misinformation, whatever, because they're starting to root through that now that there's been global pressure on that. But before it was taken down and like marked as false, 45,000 people had already retweeted it. So basically, in the video, Mr. Gates is talking about the efficacy of vaccines in older people and cautions about the risk of side effects. Basically talking about that portion of the population that Brett's talking about that may be adverse to getting certain vaccines, which is why we're doing the research. Yeah. So he basically set out a hypothetical situation, not unlike when we talk about there's always different permutations in everything, like what are they called, the models. So basically we have all the different models. He basically said if we have 1 in 10,000 side effects, that's way more. So 700 people will suffer from that. Basically saying we have to limit the side effects because it could have widespread issues. Yeah. Not saying that 700,000 people will die. That if the side effects go unchecked, that people will suffer. Basically saying the exact opposite of what they're claiming he's saying. But it's really easy to cut up a piece of video that, you know, that he said that and say, see, he said he's going to kill everybody. But hey, what's this evil genius doing? What's he really up to with his billions upon billions of dollars? I'm glad you asked. So Bill Gates has pledged $150 million for distribution of the vaccine if found. So, they marked out some goals because obviously when you're investing a bunch of money, you want to have goals. So the first goal was to make 100 million doses, and he's working with the Serum Institute to mass produce, and the goal being, and again, he might be an evil genius, somebody who's like, if his great aunt is on here and wants to send us an email at viralloadpod@gmail.com and let us know why he's so evil, or an ex-girlfriend or anybody, please reach out to us. I would love to know why this guy is so evil, you know, but he wants to mass produce it. And then the doses would be because he's backing it and paying for it, the doses would be as little as $3 per dose. I mean, that seems pretty evil, you know, less than a Happy Meal for a medication that might be able to save lives. So globally,
he's dumping so much money into this. I mean, he's hemorrhaging money. Well, I mean,
for him. Yeah. I mean, he's emptying his pockets. But for the regular man, if anybody saw, or, you know, woman, like anybody who saw this amount of money is staggering. He's also already invested $4 billion globally. For vaccine efforts known as Gavi, and you can check that out. And again, he actually does produce paper trails for all this money and stuff. So it's pretty transparent when I was going through all of this. So he's trying to fund basically a ceiling amount for the cost of all vaccines to make sure that nobody has to pay more. He is altogether now given $500 million to fund both distribution and what they call the nuts and bolts portion of the vaccine effort. So basically what Brett was talking about, those phases. Phases are expensive. It's really like expensive to pay those people to be part of it. All of that, he gave $350 million additional dollars to make sure that happens smoothly.
He's trying to inject some turbocharge into Operation Warp Speed Drive.
Yeah, for sure. He's the Schwartz that they're putting in the gas tank of, you know, of the MOG or whatever. I'm losing my Spaceballs references.
But all of these conspiracies that you've like talked about, like replace COVID-19 with like any other outbreak and it's like the same story.
Exactly. Like, and yeah.
It's all the same thing. It's the same, like, it's the same story. It's like, look at Ebola, look at HIV, look at SARS. They all follow the same script. It's like the same players. It's like just maybe replacing a few of the names of the bad guys. So like, you know, 5G replaced with something else, but like they always blame, it's always like, you know, some nefarious, like dark government, whatever. It's just, it's kind of lazy almost. It's like, it's so laughably just, it's like just the same thing.
It's a reboot. It's a reboot on top of a reboot on top of a reboot. And you're like, I don't need to see Rush Hour 6. Like, I know how this goes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, and by the way, I mentioned Gavi, where he'd given $4 billion for the global vaccine effort. So far, Gavi, since it's it was created, has immunized 750 million children, and through that effort has saved approximately 13 million lives. So, again, seems like an evil genius, but if he's doing it, he's doing it the wrong way, because if he's trying to enforce population control and trying to minimize our numbers, why does he keep keeping children alive? I don't know if you guys know this, but children are actually small people. So they actually create more people. Yeah. And so I don't get that. But this
you say that they've immunized 750 million children. I say that they've produced 750 million child soldiers.
Yeah, zombies.
Yeah,
robotic zombies. But this isn't the, like you said, Brett, like this isn't the first time, and I'm not going to go too into the weeds on this, but this isn't the first time that we've had anti-vaxxers. So anti-vaxxers go all the way back to 1853. So in 1853, they actually instituted fines for noncompliance, for not vaccinating your children. So basically there was this guardians to act against vaccine refusers and the Guardian Imprisonment Act. So basically, by 1855 or 1885, there were already 20,000 anti-vaxxers that were rooting against the smallpox vaccine. Mind you, smallpox.
So like going back to like when we've had vaccines, there have been anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, all the way through history, and it keeps going. And there's, you know, there's crazy stuff. Like it goes, you know, on and on and on and on.
Well,
but
there's like the mercury in the vaccines. Mm-hmm.
There's MMR.
The famous one is the MMR. Yeah, like vaccines cause autism. But that was the same thing with, you had a doctor who basically fudged a bunch of data. And the study was retracted, but the damage was done.
Yeah.
And
now forever.
All these conspiracies that, like, you know, vaccines cause autism, but it's not true. And it, again, it's the same trope over and over and over. It's like, you know, since we've had vaccines, we've had anti-vaxxers, but like the data, the statistics don't lie. Like there's a reason why we don't die from infectious diseases like we once did.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a reason for that. And there's a reason why we have measles outbreaks in communities that have anti-vaccination beliefs.
Yeah. And I mean, and this has happened, like you were just saying. So there are events that follow all these vaccine reductions. Every time somewhere says like, oh, we're not going to get vaccinated, we're better than that. Whoops. So, I mean, again, it's all over the place. But in the year 2000, there was an outbreak of measles about the MMR vaccine controversy. Vaccine rates dropped sharply in the UK after 1996 to 2000, and it resulted in 300 cases and 100 hospitalizations, three pediatric deaths. So, I mean, just take the vaccinations. I get it if you're actually sick and you can't get the stuff. That's fine. But I mean, over and over and over in history, when people have refused vaccines, it doesn't end well for you.
So you want a Rona-free life? We're all rooting for the Moderna or whoever. We're going to have to hit herd immunity, and this is going to be how we do it.
Yeah. And so, I mean,
and my God, what a journey.
Yeah. So, I mean, we got there. I know, you know, there was a lot to chew on, a lot of fat on that one, but I know I learned a lot. I didn't know about any of those phases, and it's pretty integral into knowing and to relax your mind on, you know.
Yeah, you know, you don't have to listen all at once. Have a pause and a LaCroix break.
Yeah, exactly. Not Jeez. Sponsored by LaCroix, but if anybody knows anybody at that sweet yeah. Nectar of the Gods company, let them know. We're here.
I'm running my own trial over here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I got, I'm dosing with LaCroix on a daily basis. I am COVID free. Mm-hmm. And I am reporting minimal side effects. But I am reporting some, including increased, need to pee on account of I'm drinking so many of them.
Well, I got a little bit of the micro burps, so that's my side effects. So different trials. I mean, same, similar, you know?
Hey.
But
God, that's where we're at. And it's looking like if all goes according to plan, we will see something in a few months, probably January 2021. And that's when the real war begins. That's when, like, I think the anti-mask thing has been just a warm-up to the battle yet to come. And I think it's going to get real weird. So we'll see.
Yeah. And in the meantime, get your flu shot. Get your flu shot. It's going to just.
Yeah. Flu season is coming, y'all.
Yeah. So get it.
That ain't gone away.
Yeah. So, but as always, if you've liked what you heard, and I hope you did. Go over to Apple Podcast, hit us up with a nice 5-star review. You know, we work for it. And then go follow us over on the socials. We are Viral Load Podcast on everything, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I'll be better about updating all those more often. So thanks for bearing with us. And I know we keep on teasing it, but we are in the final stages of getting some merch out there. So if you're a merch person,
we're
send us an email.
I'd say.
Yeah, we're definitely in phase 3, not phase 4 yet. But, you know, so if you're one of those people who are looking forward to merch, just, you know, keep that money in your savings account and just instead of burning
some good stuff coming, though.
Yeah, so, and that's it. So thank you for hanging out with us. And as always, I'm Andy Pupo.
And I'm Brett Bales.
And bye.
We're signing off.
Later.
Ooh, that was good.
Prepare to attack.
Prepare to attack
on the count of three. 1, 2, late. What happened? Where are they?
I don't know, sir. They must have hyperjets on that thing.
And what do we got on this thing? A Cuisinart?
No, sir.
We'll find them, catch them.
Yes, sir. Prepare ship for light speed.
No, light speed is too slow.
Light speed too slow?
Yes, we're gonna have to go right to... ludicrous speed.
Ludicrous speed? Sir, we've never gone that fast before. I don't know if the ship can take us.
What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
Prepare ship! Prepare ship for ludicrous speed. Fasten all seatbelts. Seal all entrances and exits. Close all shops in the mall. Cancel the 3-ring circus. Secure all animals in the zoo.
Give me that, you petty excuse for an officer. Now hear this. Ludicrous speed!
Sir, had you better buckle up?
Buckle this! Ludicrous speed! Go!